Hello, I'm Alex Newman, and you're listening to the Extraction podcast series from the Investors Chronicle, a series in which we speak to the heads of London-listed companies involved in natural resources. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Phoevos Pouroulis and Michael Jones, respectively Chief Executive and Chief Financial Officers of Theresa, a platinum and chrome miner which completed its secondary listing in London earlier this year. So Phoevos and Michael, thanks for coming in to chat on the podcast.
Thank you for having us, Alex.
Any listeners who might be familiar with Lonmin or Anglo American will know that South African platinum industry has been beset with troubles in the last few years, from sort of difficult labour relations to poor prices and choppy grades. And looking at a map of the Bushveld, you're right next to Lonmin, Amplat and Impala. So, I mean, what's different about Theresa?
Yeah, so thanks, Alex. We believe that we're a unique mining company in the fact that we're a large-scale open pit co-producer of platinum group metals and chrome concentrates. If you look at the average depth of the platinum industry in South Africa, it's 750 meters below surface. We have an 18-year life of open pit mine, thereafter followed by 40 years of underground expansion. So the virtue of the fact that we have a mechanized, skilled labor force mitigates a lot of the risks that our deep level peers have experienced, not only the legacy issues, but current issues with above inflationary costs. So I think the competitive advantage that we have, being a low cost producer in both segments, sets us apart.
Do you have comparable grades to your neighbors?
So interestingly enough, our grades, if you were to look at our project as a pure platinum play, are relatively low. And likewise for a chrome play, it's the sum of the parts that really unlocks the value. So we have one mining cost and one overhead cost that's shared between two revenue streams, which really unlocks the model that we have. And it's really proven to be a robust business model through some serious volatility in commodity prices.
One thing that's quite confusing for investors looking at the platinum industry is that when producers talk about a platinum basket, this can vary from mine to mine and from company to company. Just talk to me a little bit about what a basket of platinum metals that you produce costs to produce and what it's going to cost to keep on producing that.
Sure.
And how much it sells for.
Sure, Alex. So I think when we talk about a PGM basket, it varies in terms of the pearl split or the percentage of contained metal per mine, per se. So we have a high platinum content, around 56% PGMs. We have around 15% palladium and around 10% rhodium. We are squarely in the lowest cost quartile. I'm going to look to Michael. Our all-in cost on a PT ounce, we've published now with our annual results, and I think it is one of the lowest in the platinum industry.
Thank you, Phoevos. Just to talk about our costing, though, we are a co-product producer,
yep.
So we normally allocate our costs on a shared basis.
But if we share between platinum and chrome.
Share between platinum and chrome,
okay.
Yes. But if we then to turn around and say, look, let's do it on a byproduct base and say, what is it going to cost us per platinum ounce to produce? And as we take off the revenue from the chrome and the other platinum metal groups, and you get to a cost of $438 per ounce of platinum metal.
Right.
You need to have a look at that relative to the market price. The market price is about $922 an ounce. And of course, we have a contract with Impala, and Impala takes the concentrate we produce, and we get paid in the low 80 percentages of that metal price. So you take the 922 times about 80%, low 80s, and compare that to our total cost. So definitely the lowest cost quartile producer for the platinums, and similarly for the chrome.
I think chrome, it's fair to say, is sort of the differentiator for Theresa in a way. But I mean, it's a market that people might not be as familiar with as some of the base metals. So can you give me a sense of who buys your chrome? What's it used for?
Yeah, certainly. So South Africa contains more than 70% of the world's chrome resources, and it is the single largest producer of chrome concentrates and ferrochrome historically. China has overtaken South Africa in terms of ferrochrome capacity, and it's really driven by the massive growth in their stainless steel capacity and production. And chrome is what makes stainless steel stainless, so it's an irreplaceable commodity. The fact that China is wholly dependent on imports really suits our business model. So they have no resources of their own, and South Africa constitutes 80% of their imports of their chrome requirements to feed their ferrochrome industry and their stainless steel industry. We've seen record stainless steel melt in China this year. running at around 5 to 6% compounded annual growth rate in terms of stainless steel production and consumption. With the Chinese economy moving to a consumer-driven or consumption-driven economy, it's really boosted the consumption of stainless steel, being a late-cycle commodity, coming after carbon steel. So the infrastructure has been built. Now it's time to furnish with microwaves, washing machines, cutlery, etc. So there's a strong pull on demand, and we're seeing that reflected in the current prices of chrome ore and ferrochrome in China.
Looking at your results this morning, and you've more than doubled your specialty chrome production. Talk me through what that's used for and how hard that is to produce.
So it's not very hard to produce in the sense that it follows the same process as your metallurgical grade concentrates. It is limited by the natural resource that you have. So there's a natural limitation as to how much you can produce. It is a higher specification product, so it has a higher chrome content, typically above 44 to 46% chrome, where a metallurgical has 42% chrome content, and it has low silica values. The chemical product is used to make sodium dichromate, which is used primarily in the tanning industry, leather tanning, wood preservation products, and chrome plating that we know. So it's a fairly extensive use, rust-proof paints and pigments as well. The foundry sands are more specialized and actually talk to the particle size of the actual chrome. So it's a very particular product, and that is used in foundries for lining of castings around the world, and also for nozzle sands. So very specific use.
Okay. So that's the chemistry. In terms of the market at the moment, where are we with chrome and specialty chrome?
So we have taken quite a bit of market share in terms of the chemical market with our switch from MET to chem. We moved from around 8% the year before to approximately 21% in this financial year. And so the market generally trades at a premium, and that's why we switched our product mix. So it's a premium to the metallurgical grade, around $30 on average above the metallurgical price. And that premium has maintained itself, even through the higher metallurgical chrome prices we're seeing today.
So you've just released your first set of full-year results as a listed London company. Can you just talk me through what happened in 2016?
Sure. So 2016 has been a transformative year for us. We achieved steady state mining run rate at 4.8 million tons run of mine. We importantly processed around 4.7 million tons. We did have some safety related stoppages in the first quarter, but we were able to pick up on the mill throughput rate. And encouragingly, all our production numbers were record numbers for us. So we produced 132.6 thousand PGM ounces, 1.2 million tons of chrome concentrate, resulting in an EBITDA of $43 million, up 48.3% year on year, giving us a profit of $15.8 million a year with a headline earnings per share of 6 US cents. And encouragingly, we have proposed a maiden distribution to shareholders of 1 US cent per share. So I think, as I said, it's been a transformative year. We've hit our steady state run rates. We've reached the maturity, and I think we're ready to reap the benefits of a more buoyant commodity market, in particular metallurgical chrome concentrates.
So I guess in doing that, you've put yourself on the radar of funds which might want to track a yielding commodity group. What's your ambition going forward for the dividend? Do you want to be a big dividend stock, or are you going to hold back some of that cash?
So we have a stated dividend policy of 10% net profit after tax, consolidated net profit after tax, to be distributed in the form of a dividend or distribution. And we'll maintain that policy. And as our cash flow strengthen and profitability increases, so will that the quantum. It is our intention to be a growth and dividend play stock. We do believe that our skill set and experience allows us to expand the business organically through grassroots exploration and potentially through some M&A activity in the future. I think our focus was to achieve steady state and to deliver on our production. We have achieved that. And so going into the new year, we'll be considering various opportunities.
So just take me back to early this year. I mean, you completed your secondary listing here. You're already listed in Johannesburg. I mean, firstly, why did you do that? Secondly, why did you pass up the opportunity, it seems, to raise a lot of capital, which I expect a lot of people would expect any miner to do if they're coming to London?
So I think if we look at the rationale behind the listing, it was primarily to increase the profile of the business, to increase liquidity and attract institutional investors. And I'm pleased to say that we've achieved most of those successfully in the London market. The LSE listing has been successful, and we have attracted a number of institutional investors. We have improved the liquidity of the stock, and I think the share price appreciation speaks for itself in terms of where the share has settled.
Okay. I just wanted to turn to a couple of slightly more general issues in South African mining. We've got the mining charter, and there's various proposals that might factor into that this revised charter. I mean, what could be the impact on your operations?
So if we look at our current status, we're fully compliant with the current charter, which requires 26% black ownership at the operating level or holding level. And we welcome transformation, and we've embraced it. And in terms of our procurement policies and all the metrics, we comply fully with all the current requirements. I think where the sort of impasse sits at the moment is around the empowerment being once empowered, or the requirement to continually be empowered. And that seems to be the challenge at the moment. From our perspective, you know, we would like to see certainty and clarity of policy, and you know, we've shown that we can adapt and we can operate within the South African regulatory environment. So I think what's desperately needed now in the South African mining industry is clarity of policy.
Do you expect that in the next year?
Well, talks are underway between the Chamber of Mines and the DMR in South Africa, and the message is that they are trying to resolve it as soon as possible. So I assume early next year.
Right. And the so-called empowerment in perpetuity provisions, I mean, is that, what kind of, do you have any idea what impact that's likely to have on the business, or in terms of the shareholding? Or
look, in terms of our empowerment, the empowerment sits at the operating company level, and there are provisions within the shareholders' agreements that allow us to potentially replace one empowerment with another empowerment. So I don't think there's a risk of us being unempowered at any given point in time. So I think we will manage it very closely and understand the requirements of our partners.
Okay. And the other big story this year, I mean, which has in some ways been resolved in South African mining, is the long standoff between unions and some of the platinum miners. Where do you sit in that picture? What are your wage negotiation timelines like?
So we don't form part of the platinum wage negotiation group. We do our independent negotiations with our own labor force. We have just over 500 people directly employed by us, and we're in the second year of a 3-year wage agreement. We've had no labor disruptions at our operations by virtue of the fact that we're a skilled, small labor force. And our mining contractor, who's the biggest employer on site, is in the first year of their 3-year wage agreement, again, outside of the Platinum Group Bargaining Council.
I wonder if the fact that you have highly skilled workers may help you in a sense here. But I noticed from the reports as well, in mining terms, 2015-16 was a fatality-free year at your mines. For full disclosure, I think there were fatalities in the previous year.
Correct.
I'm always struck that deaths at mines are just a part of the reporting, you know, the reporting cycle. I mean, for investors who might be, you know, nervous about or just feel they might have a conflict in investing in mining, given the dangers and risks, I mean, do you see improvements in South African mining and in terms of health and safety standards? Or?
Look, there's a strong drive from the DMR in terms of minimising injuries and deaths in the mining industry in general, and in particular deep level platinum mining. I think there has been some progress made. However, the statistics don't always reflect the effort that has gone into advancing protocols and procedures around safety. I think the benefit we have, and I think you mentioned it, being an open pit operator using a mechanized fleet, the risks are minimized in terms of injuries compared to an underground mine. We were awarded the best in safety class from the Mine and Health Safety Authorities this year, which we're very proud of. But any injury is too many for us, and we strive for a zero harm environment. And until we achieve that, we'll never be satisfied. And I agree with you, reporting on injuries is not great. We'd rather come back and say we've had zero.
Yeah. Sure. So could you just talk me through what's next? I mean, you've you've flagged you want to grow and also pay a dividend. I mean, Michael, you're in charge of the purse strings to a degree. Are you happy to sanction if Phoebus finds another mine that he wants to build? Is that the sort of use of the cash you would like to see?
Sure. I think, first of all, we do subscribe to a discipline of capital discipline and we'll stick to our dividend policy. But yes, we do have very strict criteria. The assets we're going to be looking for would need to be very similar to what we have in Tharisa. We don't want to dilute the returns that we're getting from the mine itself. So yes, if the right proposal comes through with the right returns, with the right risk factors, we'll open the purse strings for Phoebus to go and develop something more.
Good stuff. And is that a global search, or your expertise firmly lie in South Africa?
Not so much South Africa specifically as well. I would like to diversify our risk profile, but into Africa, I think more than into more global diversification. So with a focus more on Africa.
Okay, excellent. Well, Phoebus, Michael, that's all we've got time for, but thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.